We welcome you to this special Al-Anon speaker meeting and hope you will find in this fellowship the help and friendship we have been privileged to enjoy. The Al-Anon program is based on the 12 suggested steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, which we try little by little, one day at a time, to apply to our lives, along with our slogans and the Serenity Prayer. The loving interchange of help among members and daily reading of Al-Anon literature thus make us ready to receive the priceless gift of serenity. Anonymity is an important principle of the Al-Anon program. Everything that is said here in the group meeting and member to member must be held in confidence. Only in this way can we feel free to say what is in our minds and hearts, for this is how we help one another in Al-Anon. And I've asked Kathy if she'd read the traditions.
The 12 traditions of Al-Anon. The traditions that follow bind us together in unity. They guide the groups in their relations with other groups, with AA and the outside world. They recommend group attitudes towards leadership, membership, money, property, public relations, and anonymity. The traditions evolved from the experience of AA groups in trying to solve their problems of living and working together. Al-Anon adopted these group guidelines and over the years has found them sound and wise. Although they are only suggestions, Al-Anon's unity and perhaps even its survival are dependent on adherence to these principles. One, our common welfare should come first. Personal progress for the greatest number depends upon unity. Two, for our group purpose, there is but one authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Three, the relatives of alcoholics, when gathered together for mutual aid, may call themselves an Al-Anon family group, provided that as a group, they have no other affiliation. The only requirement for membership is that there be a problem of alcoholism in a relative or friend. Each group should be autonomous, except in matters affecting another group, or Al-Anon or AA as a whole. Five, each Al-Anon family group has but one purpose, to help families of alcoholics. We do this by practicing the 12 steps of AA ourselves, by encouraging and understanding our alcoholic relatives, and by welcoming and giving comfort to families of alcoholics. Six, our family groups ought never endorse, finance, or lend our name to any outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary spiritual aim. Although a separate entity, we should always cooperate with Alcoholics Anonymous. Seven, every group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. Eight, Al-Anon 12th step work should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. Nine, our groups as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, our Al-Anon family groups have no opinion on outside issues. Hence, our name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, and TV. We need guard with special care the anonymity of all AA members. 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles above personalities.
Thanks, Kathy. And I had the privilege tonight of introducing our speaker. I asked John R. If he would come and share his story with us tonight. And I met John a few years ago, and I have always found him to be an inspiration, and I love his dedication and passion for the Al-Anon program. And I'm sure he's got something for all of us to hear, so I give you John.
Good Good evening, everyone. I'm John R., and I am a grateful member of Al-Anon. Lucille, with that kind of introduction, I don't know if you were talking about me or someone else. I want to thank Lucille for inviting me here tonight to tell my story. Before I continue, though, I need a public service announcement. If you're expecting a story of blood, guts, high drama, lightning bolts from heaven, and all that other stuff, you're going to be sadly disappointed. However, I have on several occasions looked death in the eyes, and details on that will follow. Now I just want to start with getting some vital statistics of my background out of the way first. I was born in Rahway, New Jersey, raised in Linden and Clark, New Jersey. I have two older sisters. I also have two parents. They now are deceased. My parents were not overly strict, but you minded your P's and Q's, or your manners. They taught their children very good character traits. They were religious, they worked hard, but we were not poor. And I could not find any problem with alcoholism in my family of origin. I graduated from high school and enlisted in the Navy. I was off the Gulf of Tonkin, off the Vietnam coast, before it became a war. My ship was the second American ship in the Gulf of Tonkin. When I finished my 4 years in the Navy, I entered college to become a teacher. It was at that college that I met my future wife. After graduating, we married and I taught high school for 2 years before leaving for better pay. We waited to have children, and while we were waiting, I built up my heating and air conditioning business. I was self-employed at the time. We have two wonderful children who both have their own recovery system. My daughter Elizabeth has just celebrated 10 years of sobriety, being safe in her program, and my son Ray will be joining her shortly in July. My wife has over 31 years of sobriety with only one mishap. I still count that as 31 years. I had tried Al-Anon when she first entered the program, and at the time, it just wasn't for me. I don't know what it was. I figured, you know, I just couldn't take it. But my wife, on the other hand, was a great reader, and she would leave literature around the house, and I would be picking it up here and there and reading it. And so the concepts, the steps, the traditions, and all of the program for AA was not foreign to me at all when I came into Al-Anon. In 1988, we moved from Suffern, New York to Marietta, Georgia. And again, I started my own heating and air conditioning business, and I retired in 2007. It wasn't until I hit my personal bottom in 2004, May to be exact, I came home from work and I had a very bad day. My daughter came up to me and she said, "Dad, you need a meeting." Well, she was doing her own meeting, so I thought, oh, I'm gonna go to an AA meeting. Well, it turns out she kidnapped me, and as we went into the facility where it was being held, she said to me, "Okay, Dad, that's my room over there and yours is over there." Needless to say, it's been an incredible journey, and I never look back on that time. I'm only looking forward. Tonight, I'm going to tell my story a little bit differently. I'm going to be using the Al-Anon slogans. The first slogan I'm going to use is the three C's of Al-Anon. I didn't cause it, I cannot control it, and I cannot cure it. During my courting days with my wife, or my fiance at the time, and in our marriage, we had attended an awful lot of parties. And they could drink. Well, they drank this ex-sailor under the table a few times. I thought I could hold my booze, but forget it. It was at this time that I noticed that my wife had a desire or a craving for alcohol. This drinking increased even after our marriage, the first few years that we were in it. when she was promoted to Dean of Students at the Secretarial College where she was employed, she was under enormous pressures. Funny thing, the more I tried to help her, the worse it got. And with that, she had to resign her position. In trying to control it, I literally gave up. Threats, blackmail, anger, you name it, I did it. Didn't work. There were bottles in around the house. They were like rabbits. I would replace one and there'd be three more over here. It was getting to be out of hand. And if I had a dollar for every bottle of booze that I turned into the drain, I would be driving a little different car than I am today. I do have to admit that I had one of the sweetest smelling drains and sewer lines in our subdivision. But we had to be careful, don't light matches near it. In trying to cure it, only after she was admitted into a local hospital that offered suggestions and help, did the drinking lessen. Notice I said lessen, it did not stop. It was only after I threatened to leave my wife and take the children with me that she entered AA. Once she became a member of AA, I was her number one fan, her cheerleader. I tried to start my program and I gave up. I just figured Al-Anon just wasn't for me. People in those rooms were kind of a little bit, they were laughing and joking and all that. And I'm coming in there and I'm sad Gus or gloomy Gus, and turned out that that's the way it was sometimes when you enter Al-Anon. I didn't start my program until 23 years later in May 2004. During the time of her meetings, every Friday night I would go with her because that's when they had open AA meetings. I became one of the regulars. And really, imagine that. I was a regular at an AA meeting. Okay, we can do that. The next slogan is going to be first things first. It was a roller coaster ride going up and down of this alcoholism. It reminded me of scenes of deer in the headlights, you know, with the big deer coming on there. And I was frozen because I didn't know how to handle this problem. I was looking at it and I was always scratching the top of the surface of an iceberg. Didn't realize the enormity or the size or the complexity of alcoholism. 23 years later, I came back into these rooms. And that was when I had to start setting my boundaries. I started to notice also that the minute I started setting boundaries, some sort of serenity started to come into my life. And I realized at the time, wow, this isn't too bad, this program. I don't know why I walked out 23 years earlier. But we all have our day coming into those doors. I had started to take better care of myself. I had started to do things that were put on hold because of someone else's life crises. And I had waited for them to get their act into order for me to enjoy my life. And if you have courage to change, that's mentioned on page 180 about getting your life back together. What happened is my life was put on hold while I was waiting for someone else to get their life together. Now, after I was starting to do my life, I realized that I could enjoy life. I love music, opera, classical music. Well, I also go to the Grateful Dead concerts too. I love rock concerts. And I also do my yearly pilgrimage up to New Jersey to see my family of origin. I started to enjoy life. And it was such a really good feeling to do that. I don't know why for 23 years I didn't do this earlier. It was then that I reconnected with my higher power. And at that time I became more spiritual, not religious, spiritual, and the spiritualism came within my heart, and with that it just opened me up At the meetings, I became more vulnerable. I was more emotional. And in the process, I actually grew in Al-Anon. I didn't realize it at the time, but I was growing. The third slogan, progress, not perfection. I was always a perfectionist, still am for that matter. In high school, in the Navy, in college, in my marriage, and in my business, I had to have things done correctly or it was doomed for me. I wanted everything to be correct, to be right. I remember one time I rewrote a term paper in college six, okay, you got that? Six times before I submitted it. Oh, I'm sorry, I left out an important thing here. This was before computers. So you were constantly erasing or just tearing up pages. I needed things to be done right. Well, what happened was my sponsor gave me my little comeuppance. And he told me, John, you don't have to put up with that. You have to just readjust your expectations. Instead of everybody giving me 95%, how about if would you accept 85? That could be doable. So I slowly accepted this new idea. I'll take 85% out of you and I can cover the other 15%. That's not a big deal. Slowly, I accepted this because it was completely foreign to me. I wanted everything to be perfect. But gradually, when I changed my mind about this, I saw the results happening before my eyes. And I realized that if I keep doing this, I'm going to be ending up like Don Quixote battling windmills. So I changed. By making progress and growing in Al-Anon, I began to lighten up on myself. I stopped beating up on myself. Life actually became prettier and better. I actually enjoyed living with my qualifiers. Imagine that, living with qualifiers that you enjoyed living with. Wow. And because of that, progress, not perfection, was very, very hard for me. I still struggle with it, but it's not as much as it was before. Now, it's cute because the very next slogan is one that really was hard for me to understand. How important is it? For me, everything was important. It was. That's me. You had to do everything just perfect. But this slogan helped me to get a better grip on my behavior, especially my anger. Oh, was I angry. Nasty. When I first entered these rooms, I had a very, very short fuse. I came into these doors and I had a chunk, not a chip, a chunk on my shoulder. And I dared anybody to knock it off because you're going to get retaliation real quick. Well, it seems that now my fuse is very, very long. It probably extends out to the parking lot and beyond. But I also had to do a few things for myself. I realized that people love to push my buttons. And I learned in Al-Anon how to cope with this. And some of the things that I use now are, I could nod you to death. Yeah, you could be right about that. That's another one. Can I get back to you on that? Or how about the other one? I'll think about that, but I will get back to you. And the other one, too, is, do you want to be right or do you want to be happy? And I realized that several times when I was meeting these people that I disagreed with, I had a time limit and I didn't mind because I realized once the time limit was up, it was gone. I was out of here. I didn't have to put up with them anymore. But I realized too that there are other people that love to push my buttons in my family. I have two brother-in-laws who love to do this. But I'm enjoying now having the last laugh on them because I'm not arguing and I'm not verbally getting into all kinds of problems with them. In particular, I was at one Thanksgiving down here with my brother-in-law, and on the way over, I was cautioned by my wife to be on my best behavior and no arguments, no fights, please. Well, everything went smooth. Came home, and on the way home, she said, "What in the heck did you do?" And I said, "Well, I don't know. I think I was practicing the program because they told me a few little ditties like, 'Do you want to be right or you want to be happy? Can I get back to you on that?'" 5 minutes, we were in the house, get a call from my brother-in-law. You know, my higher power does have a sense of humor. So he's on the phone, he said, "John, I had such a great time. Can we do this again for Christmas?" Naturally, I had to say yes. So the slogan, "How important is it?" has caused me to focus more on myself, becoming more serene also. In this serenity, it started to show, and it crops up in the most unusual places in your life. My wife and I were up at Cape Breton in a little town called Bay St. Lawrence. It's at the top of Cape North. And it was a Saturday morning, overcast. It had rained that morning about 4 or 5 in the morning. And we're at this little cement fishing pier about 7:30 in the morning. And it was so serene because there was no wind. You couldn't hear the gulls. There was no wave action. It was just like silence. I'm standing there and I'm looking around. And I turned to my wife and she was behind me and I just look at her and I said, "Can you feel it?" And she just nodded her head. At that time, I didn't realize what serenity meant, but I thought I was in the presence of my higher power because I just felt so serene just standing there. I could not believe it. I don't know if it's ever going to happen again to me, but the thing is that I enjoyed being in that presence. The next slogan, "One day at a time." This was another tough one for me. My wife and I were going through very tough times. Very little communication was going on. Finger pointing, bickering, you name it, we were doing it. This was in May of 1988. I thought our marriage was going to end. And this was even before Al-Anon. And I knew I had to get something. I had to pray for a sign, had to look for something. So I started to pray, and a week would go by, no sign. A couple of weeks would go by, still no sign. Months. I don't know, there's still no sign coming down to tell me what to do. Finally, after a year of praying, I did one of these dummy slaps. "Oh my gosh, that's the sign, John." The sign was, "Do nothing." After that, I couldn't believe it, but our relationship was really different. I started to talk with her more. We became each other's confidant. Decisions were better made. And where do you hear this one? I even enjoy going shopping with her. Now, I have to tell you, that's a miracle. Okay. But this coming September 2012, we're going to be celebrating our 44th anniversary just by me doing one day at a time. The next slogan, "Keep an open mind." That is so important in the Al-Anon program. I had to be really receptive to this. Because of this one slogan, I had to better understand the disease, and I became more compassionate towards my three qualifiers. I was at a meeting one time, and my sponsor was leading the discussion, and he said, "I thank my higher power for giving me an alcoholic in my life." Well, I just fell out of my chair almost. I couldn't believe what he was saying, and I thought he was smoking something illegal or doing something, you know, that was not right. But by opening his mind to this idea, he became a better person through the Al-Anon program. It's helped me to handle life a lot easier, and it continues to help me, and I have accepted that slogan, or that slogan of keep an open mind. But that phrase, being thankful to my higher power for giving me an alcoholic in my life, runs true. And I thank my higher power for giving me three qualifiers. I love them all. By opening my mind up, especially hearing what is shared at meetings, I am now taking better care of myself. And eventually I found that I'm leaving it less and less at the rooms and taking more and more home with me. The next slogan, which is very good for newcomers, listen and learn. When I first entered these rooms, I was numb. I was filled with rage, resentment. I denied everything. Hey, I was the king of denial. And I don't mean the river in Egypt, I mean denial. I denied everything. And I was lost in the fog. I would sit quietly for 2 or 3 months at the meetings, hearing and listening to others. And darn it, I didn't realize it, but they were telling my story. They just told the story with different character names. But the plot was the same. It was like a soap opera, an ongoing saga. And being sarcastic sometimes, I was thinking any minute I was going to see boxes of detergent coming into the room because it was a soap opera. But there's a funny thing about that. By listening quietly, I became more confident. I started to nod my head more. It felt wonderful just to nod my head. And it, actually what happened, I actually started to open my mouth a little bit and say a few words, and darn it, people started to nod back to me. It felt wonderful. My life got better. I started to smile at meetings. I didn't realize how much this program meant. Looking back, when I first came in here a long, long time ago in New York, I saw people laughing. Now I'm laughing at meetings too. Because I realize that where I came from and where I'm at now is so important to me that I don't want to go back there. The next slogan, let go and let God. In 2006, my wife came down with Guillain-Barré syndrome. This is an influenza that attacks the muscles and the nervous system of the body. It's extremely deadly if not totally corrected and diagnosed immediately. I came home from that first day in the hospital and I prayed and prayed. I had given her up to my higher power, because I realized I couldn't do anything for her. At this particular time, it was, you know, I'm open to God, here we go. It's up to you to do your work. I started to prepare for the worst. I didn't realize that really I had no control on this, and I was a control freak too. Well, it was an uphill battle for my family, for my wife, and for me. She is fully recovered. She's actually in this room tonight, and she can walk through these doors and go on hiking and everything. She is fully recovered. And she was on many, many, many prayer lists of people saying prayers for her. We have so much to be grateful for. And for me, just by letting go and letting God do his handiwork, another miracle in my life. The next slogan, I'm not quite sure if it is a slogan, but it is, let it begin with me. It is the Al-Anon Declaration opening phrase. It means a lot to me. I couldn't start this with someone else. I had to start it with myself. I personally had to come through those doors to come in here and sit in these rooms and listen and learn. True, my daughter brought me here, but the fact is that after that first meeting, I came back again because there was something in these rooms, something, I don't know what it was at the time, couldn't put my finger on it, but it was something that I wanted, and I didn't know what, but I wanted to keep coming back. In this program, I have seen myself grow. I've done an awful lot of service in this program, too numerous to mention. And I keep saying this to people, that if you take a look back to where you came from and where you are today, you'll see you traveled far. By letting it begin with me, I didn't realize that I was able to help people in dire needs. I seem to have a thing with Thanksgiving, but this one particular Thanksgiving about 4 or 5 years ago, I was cutting the turkey and the telephone rings. My son picks it up and says, "Dad, it's for you. It's a woman." Okay. Well, I sat there on the phone and I'm talking to her. Yeah. No. Yeah, you could do that if you wanted to. Well, maybe that's a good idea too. I didn't say anything, no comprehensive thoughts except, whatever, for 25 minutes. At the end of the conversation, she says, "John, thank you for being there. You were a great help." Really? Okay. Got off the phone, and all I can say is I had a very good Thanksgiving that day. And I'm sure she did too. Another example of letting me take the initiative was to send literature and a letter to the parents of a hospitalized daughter who is actually suffering from the effects of alcoholism. And once again, I had to say, it has to start somewhere. It had to start with me. And I'm going to shift now from the slogans to an actual part of my life that I felt sorry for. It's actually step 8 and step 9. Willing to make amends, and step 9, made amends to such people. I carried this shame, this guilt, since 1956 around my neck. The nun there at the elementary school said that, "Well, you're graduating now. You're going to be going to different schools. You're going to be separated. And with that, you're going to be rivals." Well, to me, rival meant enemy. My best friend Wayne, he was going to a different high school. Therefore, A to B to what? He became my rival. Looking back, I could not believe what I had done to him. I snubbed him, didn't want anything more to do with him because he was my enemy. Well, it wasn't until 1996, you do the math, how many years have I carried that albatross around my neck, that I was able to locate him and actually do the amend. And I told him originally when we first got on the phone that I needed to make an amend with you because I did something wrong for you. He's at my front doorstep. First thing out of his mouth is, "I don't care what it was." Picks me up and gives me the biggest bear hug. My back hurt for a while. But I forgot to mention a few things. Wayne was 6'5". And he's a retired Alaska State Trooper. We continue to catch up with each other, and we continue to enjoy each other's lives. Lucille, if you can, pass out the bookmarks. Lucille is going to be passing out some bookmarks that I made. It is conference-approved literature, and I'd like people to have something to remember this event tonight. They're all the same. The next slogan, "This too shall pass." There are times in our lives when we have very little control over things. Conditions seem impossible to change, especially life-threatening conditions, where you hold your breath and you pray for a positive outcome. Here are a few of mine. Back in high school, I was ice skating with my sisters on a reservoir. You know, boys, we always like to show off, so I decided to go close to the pier where the ice supposedly was. Well, about 2 feet from the pier, there was no ice. And I didn't realize this, but my sister saved me because it was 15 feet deep. Falling down a river embankment and into a river, I was covered with mud and slime up to my chest. Again, my sister saved me. It wasn't that deep, but it was deep enough. Falling down and laying unconscious in a shower stall on my ship in the Navy, we were trying to outrun a storm. By delaying my return flight by one day, the plane crashed. That flight occurred on March 1st, 1962, American Airlines flight number one, leaving from New York to Los Angeles. 10:09 a.m., it crashed. It was a Boeing 707. Killed 87 passengers and a flight crew of 8. Again, no survivors. I look back at that and I have no idea what made me change that day. Why I called up the ship and asked for an extra day of extension on my leave. He knows, but I sure as hell don't know. During college, I was in a liquor store working, and there was a robbery going on. I had a stub nose 38 up my nose. A stormy flight from Orlando. I was coming back from a convention in Orlando. I don't know if the lightning bolt hit the airplane or not. All I know is we were in free fall for about 3 seconds. Well, 3 seconds in an airplane seems like an eternity. Didn't want to be there, but I was there. I didn't know this at the time, but I developed a bee sting allergy. And in 2005, I came in like a drunken sailor to my customer's home, and I had these, I thought they were flies on my neck. Turned out to be yellow jackets, about 8 of them. I am certainly glad my higher power decided to let these events pass. Otherwise, I probably would never be in front of you today. And I'm sure he's trying to tell me something like, "Cool it, kid, will you? Ease off." Let time take time. This was a very emotional slogan for me. I was kind of numb when my mom passed away in 81. But when my dad passed away in 05, I became very bitter towards my higher power. I felt crushed, both physically and mentally. I lost focus on my life. I was really ticked off. At the time, I had a sponsor, same sponsor, and he would call me about every 3 or 4 days just to check in, see if I'm on this side of the grass. And I hate to say this, but if it wasn't for him, I would probably not be in the program today, because he kept being annoying, not annoying, but he kept checking up on me just to see how I was doing. And because of that, he became more and more into my life. Don't forget, I joined this rather early. And as time went on, he became very good friends with me and we helped out each other. But I want to say that in tight spots, you need a sponsor. If someone ever comes up to you and you do not have a sponsor, I would recommend you get one real quick. I became more focused in Al-Anon with the Al-Anon literature. And in my favorite book, In All Our Affairs, on page 11, there's a slogan or a motto: let time take time. I kept repeating that. That became my mantra day in, day out. Let time take time. Because I realized that if I didn't do this, I wouldn't be able to grieve and move on in my life. I gradually came back to reality. I started to enjoy life once again. Just for that brief moment, I really, really was in the pits of agony at the time. Now I enjoy coming to the program more often. And I enjoy just attending meetings as much as I can. The last one is not a slogan, but it is miracles. We all know miracles do happen. And I have to say that if you keep coming back into Al-Anon, your miracles will happen. You have to be observant and watch for them. In 2010, I was diagnosed with colorectal cancer. I felt crushed by this. That was a sentence. That Wednesday night, I went to a meeting. I took notes. Discussion leader was rattling off pages of books. I don't remember offhand which ones they were, but probably they were daily readers. I didn't share at the meeting. I was very depressed. Came home, went to bed. Following morning, I get up. I said to myself, let me see what those pages were that she was discussing. Well, by accident, now remember, I'm a perfectionist, but by accident, I turned to the wrong page in a daily reader, and I got my answer. My higher power decided for me what choice I was to make just by going to that one wrong page. My higher power has chosen for me to lead a fuller life, a healthier life, and hopefully a much better life than when I started back 8 years ago when I first came into Al-Anon. I've gotten my miracles in Al-Anon, and I can only say to everyone here tonight that if you keep coming back, like our slogan says, keep coming back, you will get your miracle. That's it. That's my story. Thank you for listening, and I'm John R.